Corps veteran, an advanced degree from the School of Hard Knocks, and continual opportunity. America's fastest growing radio talk show. This is the Sound of Freedom. This is the Jim Sumpter Show.
And good afternoon. My name is Scott Robinson, sitting in for Jim this afternoon. I know you're wondering, hold it. Jim was just on the air about 6.5 minutes ago. Where the heck did he go in this time? And the answer is that he had some business that he had to conduct this afternoon after his national show was off the air. So he asked me yesterday if I would be willing to sit in for him. I said, absolutely. People at K-Talk were paid off, apparently, and here I am now. So again, my name is Scott Robison. It's good to be here with you this afternoon. Been about 5 months since I last spent any time with you, back in early November, I guess it was. And I'm just really happy to be here now. The lines are open if you would like to call and talk. I'm willing to talk about just about anything. The numbers are 801, of course, 254-5855 in Salt Lake County. Down south, you can reach us at 470-5855, and up north, 670-5855. Of course, there's a ton of things to talk about, and I'm kind of a little confused. I don't even know where to start. So I guess we will start with probably the biggest topic of the recent past, and hopefully you're not completely tired about it yet, because I just haven't had a chance to talk to you a lot about it. I've been having to restrict myself to online chats about this. So, health insurance reform, and I'm going to make it a very deliberate attempt to not talk about health care reform, because they haven't done a dang thing to fix health care in this country. All that they're trying to do is to make sure that doctors and pharmaceutical companies can get paid. Now, that's good for them, and I'm not saying insurance is a bad thing. I do, however, think that the reform that they've put in place, ostensibly to help people, is going to hurt a lot more than it actually helps. In fact, there's this one message board that I frequent. It's called the Snyder Board, but that doesn't really matter. It's an online community, and they talk about all sorts of different topics. And recently, the question of healthcare reform was put forth. In fact, somebody asked the question, there's lots of people claiming that healthcare reform is unconstitutional. And obviously, ultimately, you and I, we don't get to decide that. We can have opinions on the subject, but we're not the ones who make the final say. There's a group of 9 people known as the Supreme Court of the United States. They're the ones who are ultimately going to make the call as to whether or not the health insurance reform legislation that was recently signed is actually constitutional. So somebody asked the question, why do people claim that it's unconstitutional? So I kind of took a stab at trying to answer that question, and I'm trying to pull it up right now, in fact, so that I can read it as I wrote it, because it's kind of lengthy, but here was my take on it. Okay, so people have different perceptions of what is or is not constitutional. Some people believe that the Constitution explicitly lists everything that the federal government is authorized to do. I know that that's a view that's held by a lot of K-Talk listeners. And thus, if it is not listed in the Constitution, for example, health insurance legislation, or a census that asks for more than a simple count of the people living in a residence, then the legislation is not constitutional. There are other people that embrace a broader interpretation, using things like the clause from the preamble to promote the general welfare as justification for federal government involvement in areas such as health insurance reform. Now, in my opinion, the best claims of unconstitutionality are related to the absence of any explicit reference to health insurance in the Constitution or the subsequent amendments to the Constitution and in the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. Now, the Ninth Amendment reads, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Thus, in my opinion, a right to choose for yourself or your family health insurance would seem to belong to the people, not the government. In fact, if, as I have heard recently, the Massachusetts plan that was signed by Mitt Romney several years ago requires everyone in the state to have insurance, it would seem to me that the Ninth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution could be used to rule that law unconstitutional. There's a big step, in my opinion, from regulating business for the common good, as government does for insurance and medical, you know, health care and so on, and requiring a private citizen to purchase a product from a company, even if it is a product intangible like insurance. Okay, so if we step on to the 10th Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. The history of health insurance in this country is that it is regulated by state governments, not the federal government. I believe that that provides at least a de facto basis for a claim that health insurance regulation is not a power of the federal government. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court tends not to use the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, especially the Tenth, to rule anything unconstitutional, so I'm not going to hold my breath that that is actually going to do us any good. Now, to go back to the preamble for a second, promoting the general welfare. There are those who would have you believe that since health insurance promotes the general welfare of people, that that's how they can require it to be purchased by citizens. So, if you look at the preamble, though, there's actually two clauses right next to one another. There is the... looking at the phone for a second. Anyway, so in the preamble, you have two separate... you have two separate clauses. There is provide for the common defense, and then there's promote the general welfare. Okay, so we provide for the common defense, we promote the general welfare. Now, I find it interesting, especially in the context of something like health insurance reform, that we can say that we provide for the common defense, but we only promote the welfare. If you look it up in the dictionary, and I know that's a bad thing for a lot of people, but if you look it up in the dictionary, provide would be most appropriately defined as to take measures in preparation for something. In this case, take measures in preparation for the common defense of the United States. Promote, on the other hand, is most appropriately defined as to advocate or urge on behalf of something or someone. So if you look at promote the general welfare, you would have the Congress is to advocate or urge on behalf of the general welfare of the people of the United States of America. Now, if the federal government was meant to provide things necessary for the general welfare, why would the Constitution not come right out and say, provide for the general welfare? They obviously had no problem saying that to provide for the common defense was such a bad thing. So why would they differentiate provide for defense but promote welfare? I think that the answer is pretty obvious personally, and that is that they were separate ideas, that they meant different things, and that the founding fathers never intended for the government to provide everything cradle to grave for the citizens of the United States. I could be wrong, obviously. Like I said earlier, there's only those 9 people in Washington, D.C. that get to decide whether or not the health insurance reform legislation is legal, is constitutional. So, You know, but we can talk about it, obviously. There's lots of other topics out there. We've had the so-called Christian militia taken down by the federal government in the last few days. We'll talk about that here a little bit more. You have President Obama going out on a limb, quote-unquote, for advocating a widely expanded program of drilling for oil off the eastern seaboard. I don't think it's such a political risk for him, really, and we'll talk about that some more, too. As I said earlier, the phone lines are open. We'll talk about whatever you would like to discuss. The numbers, again, 801-254-5855, 470-5855 in the south, 670-5855 in the north. Got a couple of people queued up. Let's go ahead and get you on the air. Caller, what's your first name?
Mike.
Hey, Mike. What would you like to talk about?
A couple things, flat time. Anyway, the more important one is the price of gasoline. It's gone up $1.10 over a year ago.
Yeah.
And I think it's because our oil companies have a monopoly, or an oligopoly, which is pretty much the same thing.
Right.
Seven big oil companies that think like one oil company, and they can raise the price of gasoline whenever they want, and they just did.
Yeah. Now, and I agree with you. I think that gas is a lot higher than it needs to be, but let me just kind of play devil's advocate for a second. What about the year before that when gas was like $2 to $3 cheaper than it had been the previous year? I mean, I didn't hear a lot of people complaining when the price went down with the exact same seven companies controlling things.
Maybe they were drilling more oil. By the way, we ought to drill out in the offshore areas. You know, China's doing it, and they're taking the oil there that should be our oil. They're taking our oil away, and we're not getting it because the liberals don't want us to drill in the ocean. There might be an accident.
Yeah, well,
what if the Chinese cause an accident?
Well, that would be okay because it wasn't us.
Yeah, because they're communists. That's okay. And the liberals like communists, so it's okay if they make an accident.
You know, I think it's ridiculous how some people are praising Obama so much for this. And okay, it is a step in the right direction.
Well, I should have done it 2 years ago.
He should have done a lot more. I mean, why is the West Coast still off limits? Why is it only a very relatively narrow span of the eastern seaboard that we're going to drill? The reality is that he's still pandering to, you know, the California. The West Coast has more electoral votes than any other group than, you know, in an isolated geographic area. And that's exactly what he continues to do. He's just trying to make sure that, you know, he doesn't lose the California electoral votes, but he doesn't mind maybe some of the slightly smaller East Coast things going away, especially when he knows that it's going to take years to ever actually bring anything to market from this exploration and drilling. It's not something that's going to happen right away. Well, I'm going to talk with you some more here on the other side of this break. We've only got a few seconds left. My name's Scott Robison, sitting in for Jim Sumter.
This is the Sound of Freedom. This is the Jim Sumter Show.
And we are back. My name is Scott Robison, sitting in for Jim Sumter this afternoon as he tends to some personal matters. We do have lines open if you would like to be on the air. I'm willing to talk about just about anything. Doesn't have to be something that I brought up first. The lines are open, 801-254-5855 in Salt Lake County, 801-470-5855 in Utah County, and in Weber and North Davis counties, the number is 801-670-5855. Probably don't need to list the 801 every time, but, you know, I'm kind of anal retentive that way. Let's get back to Mike. Is it Mike, right?
Yeah.
Mike, you're back on the air.
Okay. In addition to drilling for more oil, if I was the President of the United States, I would order new refineries to be built. I would order them by executive order. I think you could do that. And then after they were built, I would sell them to independent companies. Well, independent companies that are not associated with Exxon and his and their friends.
Well, I don't know if I like the idea of the federal government getting into the building refinery business. It seems like President Obama has had no problem whatsoever taking over just about every industry conceivable, and that would feel a little bit like that to me. What he can do and what he should do is just get the government the hell out of the way so that private industry can come around, build more refineries so that we're, you know, when we have an accident up here at, what was it, Golden Eagle Refinery or whatever it is up there in North Salt Lake, it's like the next day you see all the prices shoot up, even though it really doesn't make that big of an impact. It's because everybody's doing reactionary pricing. But if we would just get out of the way of private industry doing what private industry does and let them build refineries, actually license things like, you know, nuclear power plants and things like that, that would be so much better for everyone.
But I must point out, when private industry has a monopoly or an oligopoly, seven big oil companies that think like one big oil company, they don't want to build extra refineries because they want to control the supply to control the price and then get rich. So anyway, also, I think what we could do is start building alternative cars, alternative vehicles, like electric cars.
Absolutely.
I
think
Chevrolet's got one. You know, it's called the Volt coming out.
Right. Yeah.
Ford wanted to make one. Toyota is going to. Although they should bring it out right away with all the trouble they're having.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I drive a Prius myself. I commute so much every day that a couple years ago I bought one just before we hit that huge $4 a gallon spike. I would like to say that it was just a prophetic thing on my part, but it wasn't. In reality, I just happened to get a Prius at the right time so that when everybody else was paying $4 a gallon for their, you know, for gas in their 25-mile-a-gallon vehicles, I was fortunate to be paying the same price but getting closer to 60 miles to the gallon. But, yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, look, that's another perfect example of where government just gets too involved in things that should be in the province of private industry. They regulate automobile manufacturing so much, and some of it is okay. I mean, some of it's for the better. But there's no reason that they need to dictate as much as they do. They just need to make sure that there's full disclosure so that everybody who buys a new vehicle understands what they're really getting themselves into. But there's no reason why, you know, small companies shouldn't be able to start manufacturing electric vehicles in a very low quantity way, except for the fact there are so many federal regulations that you have to hire more lawyers to make sure that you dot all the I's and cross all the T's, instead of engineers and assembly line people to actually make the cars in the first place.
Actually, Saturn Corporation was producing and selling an electric car called the EV1. Oh, wait a minute, they didn't sell it, they leased it to the public. And it was fully electric, no gasoline engine, just lead batteries, you had to charge them every night. But it was designed well, built well, and it ran well, and the people that had one loved it. And guess what happened to it?
They, after the leases were over, they collected them all and put them in shredders.
Right. They certainly did. And I think it was because somebody in the oil companies, one of the top management people, you know, maybe the CEO of Exxon, called the CEO of General Motors and said, hey, we don't like that electric car. We can't make any money off it because they don't buy gasoline for it. So get rid of it.
Yeah.
And they did.
Well, and the thing is that the energy companies, the oil companies, they could start transitioning to other models. They could be selling a lot more, you know, compressed natural gas or things like that. There's no reason why all of our cars have to work on strictly petroleum-based products.
Chevrolet did that. Chevrolet had a Chevrolet truck that ran on two different fuels. It was bi-fuel. It ran on gasoline or natural gas. And it was a fleet vehicle.
Hold on a second, Mike. We're going into a break. This is the Jim Sumpter Show. I'm Scott Robinson. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
This is the Jim Sumpter Show.
Welcome back. This is the Jim Sumpter Show, KTKK Local Edition. My name is Scott Robinson, sitting in for Jim today as he takes care of some things. I'm going to get back to Mike here and let him make a final comment. Then Sovereign, you'll be up next. And my apologies to whoever called in on the North Davis-Weber line. I didn't get to them quickly enough, and they hung up on me, so I'm really sorry. If you'd call back, I'll get you on right after Sovereign. So in the meantime, those numbers are, in case you'd like to call, Salt Lake County, 254-5855, in Utah County, 470-5855, and in Weber, North Davis, the number is 670-5855. Mike, if you're still with me, go ahead and make your last point. Oops. You know what, Mike, I'm like mildly retarded here apparently, and pushed the wrong button, so I didn't hear anything you just said. So now you can make your last point.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, Chevrolet actually built a vehicle, a Chevy truck, full-size truck, that ran on natural gas, but it was bi-fuel. You could run it on gasoline or natural gas, and it was part of a fleet vehicle, and I saw one of them. It was owned by Salt Lake City, and they bought a lot of them, and maybe they still have them, and I'm wondering if Chevrolet still sells that combination. Can you buy a bi-fuel truck for fleets? Maybe you could call them and ask them, huh?
Well, that's a good question. I know that there are options like that out there. Maybe I don't know if they're available from the big motor companies directly, but I do know that it is possible to, at the very least, do a conversion so that you're bi-fuel and you can still be gasoline, or you can do compressed natural gas as the situation warrants, since obviously it's a lot harder to fill compressed natural gas. The infrastructure is just not there. You know, I see no reason other than excessive government regulation at this point that we don't have more electric vehicles already out there, or more flex fuel vehicles, or what other options are there? I mean, I drive a hybrid vehicle. You can have plug-in hybrids that you can charge overnight and then still have the gasoline engine, much like the Chevy Volt that you were talking about earlier does. There are so many things. Hydrogen fuel cells. There are lots of options out there that could get us, if not completely off of a petroleum-based ecosystem, that, you know, we could at least greatly reduce our dependence on foreign oil, which is what we keep saying we want to do, and yet we just never get around to doing it. Because, well, one of the reasons is that the big oil companies will come along as soon as we start making progress. They'll come along and lower the price of oil so that it's a more affordable option again for a little while, until we forget about that other option that we were experimenting with for a while, and then we can move on. Anyway, Mike, thanks so much for the call. I do appreciate it. Sovereign, you're on the air.
Hi. Before I go into my main topic, did you see what happened about an hour ago in Hawaii?
I have not.
Apparently there's an active volcano over there that blew its top on what they call the Big Island, which I guess is the island of Hawaii.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, you can check that out. I wanted to ask you too. All I saw was a satellite view on it. It made a big plume. You couldn't even see the islands. Apparently, California will get ashes in about 6 days or so. I wanted to ask you though, what do you do if I can? If that's not too personal.
No, not at all. By day, I'm a computer programmer. I work for a company called MediaPort Entertainment here in the Salt Lake Valley. I write software to support the sale and distribution of digital media, songs, movies, ringtones, and games for your phones, all sorts of things like that. So
that's awesome. And what languages do you use mostly, and what do you like the most out of the languages you know?
Well, primarily we use C# at my current job, which is a language from Microsoft. I personally have also written a lot of stuff in C++, which is probably my favorite programming language. I've also used older languages like Fortran. I do scripting with batch files and VBScript and lots of things that are going to bore this audience to tears very quickly.
Can I ask you for, just so we don't bore them, just and real quickly, can I ask you for a piece of advice?
You can ask.
I'm doing PHP, and I'm starting to actually get it and make things happen with it. And I was kind of using that as a leg into C++. Do you think that that would be a good avenue?
To
go that route through PHP to C++? Because PHP is a derivative, I believe, of C++, sort of.
Well, very, very, very loosely speaking, PHP kind of just takes ideas from lots of different languages. My experience, I attended BYU back in the mid to late 80s, and one of the classes that they have you take is not on one particular language. It's kind of an exposure to a lot of programming languages in one semester, where you cover four sort of in depth for a couple of weeks each, and then you just touch on a lot of other ones through that time. What I learned from that class, that you know, and others, but particularly that class, was that programming is a logical thing. If you can think logically, then you can write software in pretty much any language that you would encounter. The details of it, like, you know, how do I write something to the screen, or how do I get input from the keyboard or the mouse or whatever, those are implementation details that will vary, but that's why they make reference manuals, and that's why you have the internet. So you can do that kind of research and find the specific things that you need to know for the language that you need to use right now. But the important part is thinking logically so that you can actually solve the problem that you need to solve. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you for that. And I don't want to go too far because of the audience, but thank you for that. And let's see if we can do some logical thinking on this topic. I love the alternate energy topic, by the way. That's great. But I wanted to just go right back to your original opening topic, which was with the health care and the constitutionality of the bill. And from what I understood about the bill and why it might be deemed unconstitutional was because it was telling you to do something. It was a law that was making you do something as opposed to a law that was stopping you from doing something that's harming someone else, which is typically what the Constitution would be centered around.
Yeah, I mean,
protecting.
If you think about it for a second, though, they pass laws all the time that tell us to do things. The most notable one I could come up with is, you know, paying your taxes by April 15th. But you're right, you have to wear a seatbelt, although those are state laws, not federal law. And in fact, I think that's where it really comes down to. I would have less problem, I mean, not that I would welcome Utah telling me that I had to buy a certain type of insurance for my family. I mean, we do have health insurance, and it certainly has been a valuable thing for my family. And I do feel sorry for those who don't have it or can't afford it for whatever reason. I just don't think that it's the federal government's responsibility, and that there is really the crux of the matter to me. When you
respond to that.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll respond to that. See, another thing that I thought was that what they're trying to do, or let's just say their reasoning behind what they're presenting as their motive for the bill, is that if people don't have insurance and they get ill or they get injured, then they become dependent on something else. And because of the society, we don't typically want to let, you know, we don't think of ourselves as a society that would just let people die in the street. You know, we would get them out of the street or something. Because if people get sick and they can't pay for their mortgage or can't work, then they become homeless. They become homeless and then all sorts of other problems. So it's kind of that's sort of the reason behind it, is to not burden everyone else through the tax system and the welfare system and whatnot for someone else's ailments. That I believe that's isn't that the Am I on the right track with that? That's sort of like the motivation what gave rise to the bill?
I don't dispute that that's the motivation that they're, I mean,
okay.
I think that there are some people in Washington, D.C. who see this as an opportunity to grab some power that they did not have previously and thus control the lives of the people that they look down upon. Now, I don't know which of the politicians in Washington are like that. I don't know which ones are doing this because they sincerely want to make things better for everyone. So I'm not going to try to ascribe a motive necessarily to, you know, Barack Obama or to Ted Kennedy if he were still with us, you know, because obviously health, you know, insurance reform was one of his big items that he really felt strongly about for generations. I mean, since I was a small child. So, you know,
well, here's another. There's several ways. There's several elements that need to be looked at. We have to start with the foundation. Why does the bill exist? So we know at least the history of the bill. If we don't understand that, then we won't understand what they're trying to do, or at least what they're telling us that they're trying to do. They may have hidden agendas, but we also have to look at the overt as well as any possible covert. I'm an avid conspiracy theorist, but I'm also I've been doing it long enough to know that not everything is a conspiracy. But without going, I mean, we can discuss the conspiracy aspect of it, but we've got the foundation. If we assume that that's correct, that we have the foundation for the bill. Now the question though is that what about what they're telling us we have to buy? Insurance from who and to whom do we go to receive the benefits of the insurance? Now we're dealing with a controlled medical industry, and there's an entire host of problems that go along with that. Medical mainstream versus alternative. Is alternative supported by the insurance? Is mainstream always the right thing for you? Do they always make the right decisions? We know that they push pills a lot, that they really want to get those pills into you because they make a lot of money on the pills. So we get into the whole drug industry conspiracy and all that that's tied in to forcing us to pay for all of this. And then you get into the consumer index. When you look at the fact, and this is the fact, that what people buy, including the medical, what they buy in the medical industry is all set, adds up to 70% of the consumer index, which of course would boost the economy. So if you could theorize, I don't know that I would actually sell this, but you could theorize that by forcing this bill on everyone, it boosts the consumer index, which saves them from the eventual collapse of a debt-based economy, understanding that if everyone paid off all of their debt, the entire economy would collapse. A lot of people don't understand that. Most people don't, actually. But this entire
hold on a second. Hold on. We're going into a break. We'll be back in just a minute. My name is Scott Robinson, and this is the Jim Sumpter Show. 254-470 or 670-5855.
States of America. This is the Jim Sumpter Show.
And welcome back. This is the Jim Sumpter Show. My name is Scott Robinson, sitting in for Jim this afternoon as he takes care of some things that just could not wait anymore. I'm going to get back to Sovereign here in just a second to continue our conversation on health insurance reform. In the meantime, we do have lines open. If you would like to call and comment on this or really any topic whatsoever, the numbers are 801-254-5855 in Salt Lake and South Davis counties. In the South, Utah County, 801-470-5855. And in the North, Weber and North Davis, 670-5855. Of course, area code 801 for each and every number. Are you still with me, Sovereign?
Yeah, I definitely am. And so I was just, you know, tying from the motivation to the bill to how it affects everything else, particularly how it affects the economy. It is such a massive part of the economy.
That always seems to be something that the government wants to do, regardless of who's in control. I'm not trying to ascribe this to just, you know, a Democrat administration that's in power, mm-hmm. is to you know, just take more control of things. And, you know, even if their motivations are well-intentioned, that it's to, you know, make things more affordable for the people, at least in this case with health insurance reform, I think it is one of the most massive failures of anything that the federal government has ever done, or at least will prove to be, because they don't do anything to try to affect the price of health care. There is absolutely nothing in this legislation that is going to make an office visit to your doctor come down in price. There's really nothing in this legislation that's going to make the price of a prescription go down. I guess one could argue in a very tenuous way that if everybody has insurance so that the system doesn't have to absorb the price or, you know, the cost of unpaid medical bills, then they can lower the price. I'll be very surprised if anything even remotely like that happens.
You know, that's a great point, and it's the perfect segue to my parting shot, is that I wanted to close on this topic. I'll take as much time as you give me, but I definitely want to get a closing opportunity, so I'm going to take it now, and if you want to comment, then I'll continue with you. Otherwise, you can move on to another caller.
Go ahead.
I want to segue from that point, because that's exactly my thought, is that, see, I have this philosophy that anything that affects everybody should be, you know, in general, it's a general philosophy, not necessarily across the board, specific to everything, but in general, my philosophy is that anything that affects the entire society should be non-profit. Now, that doesn't mean you can't make money to make it work well, but it should be typically something that's non-profit. I believe that the economy should be non-profit. There should be no debt-based economy. I believe that the medical industry should be non-profit. There should be medical for everybody, and it should be affordable. I believe alternate energy and energy in general should all be based on non-profit. I think all the oil non-profit. Now, there are probably some problems, and there might be some arguments that could be made, legitimate ones as well. But I think, like solar panels, for example, that should be all non-profit, so they're as cheap as possible, and as many people that can afford them, that want to buy them, make it as affordable as possible so that we can charge our electric cars and things and feed power back into the grid when we don't need it and all that. And it's just, I think that's what would work. I think a certain level of socialism, willful, deliberate, everybody's for it socialism, is the only socialism that really works. And capitalism, if you leave it run amok, and socialism run amok, they ultimately become the same thing, dictatorial, tyrannical. But if they both can work harmoniously together, applied correctly, then you really have something that works. In theory, that's my philosophy.
Yeah, see, and here's where I would disagree with you. I mean, on the one hand, you've made it impossible to disagree with you because you did throw in the caveat that, you know, if everybody's for it, and we both know that's never going to happen, so therefore your complete foundation for making the intellectual argument is gone, because at no point, I mean, it's hard to get a group of 10 people to agree on a bunch of things, much less 310 million people or however many there are in this country at this point, or the 6+ billion people on the planet.
You know, I don't know, though. Some things I do think that if people can garner a higher level of wisdom, I mean, obviously, you know, everybody has to be raised up to a similar level of, we'll call it wisdom, so that they can forego their greed and their need in certain things. Like, if energy affects everybody and it's a problem for our nation, let's just all agree that let's make it as low cost as possible. Now, who in the country is not going to want to make energy as low cost as possible, other than people who want to sell energy? So the people who want to sell energy have the personal agenda. Well, we simply say, sorry, if you want to try to sell energy and get money on it, you have the right to do it, because you can enjoy capitalism, but we're going to agree to make it non-profitable so it's as cheap as possible. Now, if you think you can compete with that, go ahead and try. But all of us have agreed to make it non-profitable.
Well, okay, so the problem I see with your argument, though, is that you can make that argument for just about anything. Let's say computers, something that I love computers. I have a bunch of them at home. I work with them all day, every day. And with the level of internet accessibility for government information and things like that at this point, you could say that a computer is a necessity anymore. Kids need it for school. We need it for, you know, interaction with the government and everything else. So really, computers should be a nonprofit industry. Of course, there are some in the computer industry that would say they already are nonprofit, but we'll get to that in a minute. We're going into another break. I'm Scott Robison. This is The Jim Sumpter Show.
America's fastest growing radio talk show.
Jim Sumpter.
This is The Jim Sumpter Show.
Okay, we've got less than 2 minutes left. I'm not going to take a lot of time. I will remind you of the phone numbers. 254-5855, 470-5855 in the south, 670-5855 in the north. We've still got Sovereign on. I'm going to give him the last little bit here to say whatever he wants to say. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. I think that you make a good argument, but power supersedes computers because computers need power. Computers are an option. You don't have to have a computer, but the way we are today, if some people didn't have power, they would die. If they didn't have a computer, they would only cry. So I think there really is a difference. I like your argument, though. It's definitely a good point. But I think that I'm instinctively thinking that if I give some time to it, to mull over it, power, I still believe, should be nonprofit, whereas computers, I just don't see that everybody needs a computer, but everybody pretty much needs power at this point.
Well, see, and here's where I think I would go with you. What I think is that, utilities in particular, I understand that it's a big undertaking, and that's why we pretty much allow a monopoly in a given area, but we seem to have managed to take in, you know, telephones out of the utility model and make it an open access model. I think that we could do similar things with the electric grid, with the water system maybe. I don't know. I'm not saying it would be an easy thing to figure out. I just think that a truly competitive system is what would really work best. We'll be back after the news.